Don Guillermo came out, standing straight, near-sighted, grey-headed, of medium height, with a shirt with a collar button but no collar, standing there and crossing himself once and looking ahead, but seeing little without his glasses, but walking forward well and calmly. He was an appearance to excite pity. But someone shouted from the line, "Here, Don Guillermo! Up here, Don Guillermo! In this direction! Here we all have your products!" They had had such success joking at Don Faustino that they could not see now that Don Guillermo was a different thing, and if Don Guillermo was to be killed, he should be killed quickly and with dignity. "Don Guillermo," another shouted, "should we send to the house for thy spectacles?" Don Guillermo's house was no house, since he had not much money, and was only a fascist to be a snob and to console himself that he must work for little, running a wooden implement shop. He was a fascist, too, from the religiousness of his wife, which he accepted as his own due to his love for her. He lived in an apartment in the building 3 houses down the square, and when Don Guillermo stood there, looking near-sightedly at the lines, the double lines he knew he must enter, a woman started to scream from the balcony of the apartment where he lived. She could see him from the balcony, and she was his wife. "Guillermo," she cried, "Guillermo, wait and I will be with thee." Don Guillermo turned his head toward where the shouting came from. He could not see her. He tried to say something, but he could not. Then he waved his hand in the direction the woman had called from and started to walk between the lines. "Guillermo," she cried. "Guillermo! Oh, Guillermo!" She was holding her hands on the rail of the balcony and shaking back and forth. "Guillermo!" Don Guillermo waved his hand again toward the noise and walked into the lines with his head up, and you would not have known what he was feeling except for the color of his face. Then some drunkard yelled, "Guillermo!" from the lines, imitating the high, cracked voice of his wife, and Don Guillermo rushed toward the man, blindly, with tears now running down his cheeks, and the man hit him hard across the face with his flail, and Don Guillermo sat down from the force of the blow and sat there crying, but not from fear, while the drunkards beat him, and one drunkard jumped on top of him astride his shoulders and beat him with a bottle. After this, many of the men left the lines, and their places were taken by the drunkards who had been jeering and saying things in bad taste through the windows of the Ayuntamiento. "I myself had felt much emotion at the shooting of the Guardia Civil by Pablo," Pilar said. "It was a thing of great ugliness, but I had thought if this is how it must be, this is how it must be. And at least there was no cruelty, only the depriving of life, which, as we all have learned in these years, is a thing of ugliness, but also a necessity to do if we are to win and to preserve the Republic." When the square had been closed off and the lines formed, I had admired and understood it as a conception of Pablo, although it seemed to me to be somewhat fantastic, and that it would be necessary for all that was to be done in good taste if it were not to be repugnant. Certainly if the fascists were to be executed by the people, it was better for all the people to have a part in it, and I wished to share the guilt as much as any, just as I hoped to share in the benefits when the town should be ours. But after Don Guillermo I felt a feeling of shame and distaste, and with the coming of the drunkards and the worthless ones into the lines, and the abstention of those who left the lines as a protest after Don Guillermo, I wished that I might disassociate myself altogether from the lines, and I walked away, across the square, and sat down on a bench under one of the big trees that gave shade there. 2 peasants from the lines walked over, talking together, and one of them called to me, "What passes with thee, Pilar?" "Nothing, man," I told him. "Yes," he said, "speak. What passes?" "I think that I have a bellyful," I told him. "Us too," he said, and they both sat down on the bench. One of them had a leather wineskin, and he handed it to me. "Rinse out thy mouth," he said, and the other said, going on with the talking they had been engaged in, "The worst is that it will bring bad luck. Nobody can tell me that such things as the killing of Don Guillermo in that fashion will not bring bad luck." Then the other said, "If it is necessary to kill them all, and I am not convinced of that necessity, let them be killed decently and without mockery." "Mockery is justified in the case of Don Faustino," the other said, "since he was always a farcer and was never a serious man. But to mock such a serious man as Don Guillermo is beyond all right." "I have a bellyful," I told him, and it was literally true because I felt an actual sickness in all of me inside, and a sweating, and a nausea, as though I had swallowed bad seafood. "Then nothing," the one peasant said. We will take no further part in it. But I wonder what happens in the other towns. They have not repaired the telephone wires yet, I said. It is a lack that should be remedied. Clearly, he said, who knows but what we might be better employed putting the town into a state of defense than massacring people with this slowness and brutality. I will go to speak with Pablo, I told them, and I stood up from the bench and started toward the arcade that led to the door of the Ayuntamiento from where the lines spread across the square. The lines now were neither straight nor orderly, and there was much and very grave drunkenness. Two men had fallen down and lay on their backs in the middle of the square and were passing a bottle back and forth between them. One would take a drink and then shout, "Viva la anarquía!" lying on his back and shouting as though he were a madman. He had a red and black handkerchief around his neck. The other shouted, "Viva la libertad!" and kicked his feet in the air and then bellowed, "Viva la libertad!" again. He had a red and black handkerchief, too, and he waved it in one hand and waved the bottle with the other. A peasant who had left the lines and now stood in the shade of the arcade looked at them in disgust and said, "They should shout 'Long live drunkenness.' That's all they believe in." "They don't believe even in that," another peasant said. "Those neither understand nor believe in anything." Just then one of the drunkards got to his feet and raised both arms with his fists clenched over his head and shouted, "Long live anarchy and liberty and I obscenity in the milk of the republic." The other drunkard, who was still lying on his back, took hold of the ankle of the drunkard who was shouting and rolled over so that the shouting drunkard fell with him, and they rolled over together and then sat up, and the one who had pulled the other down put his arm around the shouter's neck and then handed the shouter a bottle and kissed the red and black handkerchief he wore, and they both drank together. Just then a yelling went up from the lines, and looking up the arcade, I could not see who it was that was coming out because the man's head did not show above the heads of those crowded about the door of the Ayuntamiento. All I could see was that someone was being pushed out by Pablo and Cuatro Dedos with their shotguns, but I could not see who it was, and I moved on close toward the lines where they were packed against the door to try to see. There was much pushing now, and the chairs and the tables of the fascists' café had been overturned except for one table on which a drunkard was lying with his head hanging down and his mouth open, and I picked up a chair and set it against one of the pillars and mounted on it so that I could see over the heads of the crowd. The man who was being pushed out by Pablo and Cuatro Dedos was Don Anastasio Rivas, who was an undoubted fascist and the fattest man in the town. He was a grain buyer and the agent for several insurance companies, and he also loaned money at high rates of interest. Standing on the chair, I saw him walk down the steps and toward the lines, his fat neck bulging over the back of the collar band of his shirt, and his bald head shining in the sun. But he never entered them because there was a shout, not as of different men shouting, but of all of them. It was an ugly noise, and was the cry of the drunken lines all yelling together, and the lines broke with the rush of men toward him, and I saw Don Anastasio throw himself down with his hands over his head, and then you could not see him for the men piled on top of him. And when the men got up from him, Don Anastasio was dead from his head being beaten against the stone flags of the paving of the arcade, and there were no more lines but only a mob. "We're going in," they commenced to shout. "We're going in after them." "He's too heavy to carry," a man kicked at the body of Don Anastasio, who was lying there on his face. "Let him stay there." "Why should we lug that tub of tripe to the cliff? Let him lie there." "We are going to enter and finish with them inside," a man shouted. "We're going in." "Why wait all day in the sun?" another yelled. "Come on, let us go." The mob was now pressing into the arcade. They were shouting and pushing, and they made a noise now like an animal, and they were all shouting, "Open up, open up," for the guards had shut the doors of the Ayuntamiento when the lines broke. Standing on the chair, I could see in through the barred window into the hall of the Ayuntamiento, and in there it was as it had been before. The priest was standing, and those who were left were kneeling in a half-circle around him, and they were all praying. Pablo was sitting on the big table in front of the mayor's chair with his shotgun slung over his back. His legs were hanging down from the table, and he was rolling a cigarette. Cuatro Dedos was sitting in the mayor's chair with his feet on the table, and he was smoking a cigarette. All the guards were sitting in different chairs of the administration, holding their guns. The key to the big door was on the table beside Pablo. The mob was shouting, "Open up! Open up! Open up!" as though it were a chant, and Pablo was sitting there as though he did not hear them. He said something to the priest, but I could not hear what he said for the noise of the mob. The priest, as before, did not answer him, but kept on praying. With many people pushing me, I moved the chair close against the wall, shoving it ahead of me as they shoved me from behind. I stood on the chair with my face close against the bars of the window and held on by the bars. A man climbed on the chair, too, and stood with his arms around mine, holding the wider bars. "The chair will break," I said to him. "What does it matter?" he said. "Look at them. Look at them pray." His breath on my neck smelled like the smell of the mob, sour, like vomit on paving stones, and the smell of drunkenness. And then he put his mouth against the opening in the bars with his head over my shoulder and shouted, "Open up! Open!" And it was as though the mob were on my back as a devil is on your back in a dream. Now the mob was pressed tight against the door so that those in front were being crushed by all the others who were pressing, and from the square a big drunkard in a black smock with a red and black handkerchief around his neck ran and threw himself against the press of the mob and fell forward onto the pressing men, and then stood up and backed away, and then ran forward again and threw himself against the backs of those men who were pushing, shouting, "Long live me, and long live anarchy!" As I watched, this man turned away from the crowd and went and sat down and drank from a bottle, and then while he was sitting down, he saw Don Anastasio, who was still lying face down on the stones, but much trampled now, and the drunkard got up and went over to Don Anastasio and leaned over and poured out the bottle onto the head of Don Anastasio and onto his clothes, and then he took a matchbox out of his pocket and lit several matches, trying to make a fire with Don Anastasio. But the wind was blowing hard now, and it blew the matches out, and after a little the big drunkard sat there by Don Anastasio shaking his head and drinking out of the bottle, and every once in a while leaning over and patting Don Anastasio on the shoulders of his dead body. All this time the mob was shouting to open up, and the man on the chair with me was holding tight to the bars of the window and shouting to open up, until it deafened me with his voice roaring past my ear and his breath foul on me, and I looked away from watching the drunkard who had been trying to set fire to Don Anastasio and into the hall of the Ayuntamiento again. And it was just as it had been. They were still praying as they had been, the men all kneeling with their shirts open, some with their heads down, others with their heads up, looking toward the priest and toward the crucifix that he held, and the priest praying fast and hard and looking out over their heads, and in back of them Pablo, with his cigarette now lighted, was sitting there on the table swinging his legs, his shotgun slung over his back, and he was playing with the key. I saw Pablo speak to the priest again, leaning forward from the table, and I could not hear what he said for the shouting. But the priest did not answer him, but went on praying. Then a man stood up from among the half-circle of those who were praying, and I saw he wanted to go out. It was Don José Castro, whom everyone called Don Pepe, a confirmed fascist and a dealer in horses. And he stood up now, small, neat-looking, even unshaven, and wearing a pajama top tucked into a pair of gray-striped trousers. He kissed the crucifix, and the priest blessed him, and he stood up and looked at Pablo and jerked his head toward the door. Pablo shook his head and went on smoking. I could see Don Pepe say something to Pablo, but could not hear it. Pablo did not answer. He simply shook his head again and nodded toward the door. Then I saw Don Pepe look full at the door and realized that he had not known it was locked. Pablo showed him the key, and he stood looking at it an instant, and then he turned and went and knelt down again. I saw the priest look around at Pablo, and Pablo grinned at him and showed him the key, and the priest seemed to realize for the first time that the door was locked, and he seemed as though he started to shake his head, but he only inclined it and went back to praying. I do not know how they could not have understood the door was locked unless it was that they were so concentrated on their praying and their own thoughts. But now they certainly understood, and they understood the shouting, and they must have known now that all was changed. But they remained the same as before. By now the shouting was so that you could hear nothing, and the drunkard who stood on the chair with me shook with his hands at the bars and yelled, "Open up! Open up!" until he was hoarse. I watched Pablo speak to the priest again, and the priest did not answer. Then I saw Pablo unsling his shotgun, and he reached over and tapped the priest on the shoulder with it. The priest paid no attention to him, and I saw Pablo shake his head. Then he spoke over his shoulder to Cuatro Dedos, and Cuatro Dedos spoke to the other guards, and they all stood up and walked back to the far end of the room and stood there with their shotguns. I saw Pablo say something to Cuatro Dedos, and he moved over two tables and some benches and the guards stood behind them with their shotguns. He had made a barricade in that corner of the room. Pablo leaned over and tapped the priest on the shoulder again with the shotgun, and the priest did not pay attention to him, but I saw Don Pepe watching him while the others paid no attention, but went on praying. Pablo shook his head, and seeing Don Pepe looking at him, he shook his head at Don Pepe and showed him the key, holding it up in his hand. Don Pepe understood, and he dropped his head and commenced to pray very fast. Pablo swung his legs down from the table and walked around it to the big chair of the mayor on the raised platform behind the long council table. He sat down in it and rolled himself a cigarette, all the time watching the fascists who were praying with the priest. You could not see any expression on his face at all. The key was on the table in front of him. It was a big key of iron, over a foot long. Then Pablo called to the guard something I could not hear, and one guard went down to the door. I could see them all praying faster than ever, and I knew that they all knew now. Pablo said something to the priest, but the priest did not answer. Then Pablo leaned forward, picked up the key and tossed it underhand to the guard at the door. The guard caught it, and Pablo smiled at him. Then the guard put the key in the door, turned it, and pulled the door toward him, ducking behind it as the mob rushed in. I saw them come in, and just then the drunkard on the chair with me commenced to shout, "Ai, ai, ai," and pushed his head forward so I could not see, and then he shouted, "Kill them! Kill them! Club them! Kill them!" And he pushed me aside with his two arms, and I could see nothing. I hit my elbow into his belly, and I said, "Drunkard, whose chair is this? Let me see." But he just kept shaking his hands and arms against the bars and shouting, "Kill them! Club them! Club them! That's it! Club them! Kill them! Cabrones! Cabrones! Cabrones!" I hit him hard with my elbow and said, "Cabron! Drunkard, let me see." Then he put both his hands on my head to push me down, and so he might see better, and leaned all his weight on my head and went on shouting, "Club them! That's it! Club them!" "Club yourself," I said, and I hit him hard where it would hurt him, and it hurt him, and he dropped his hands from my head and grabbed himself and said, "No hay derecho, mujer. This woman you have no right to do." And in that moment, looking through the bars, I saw the hall full of men flailing away with clubs and striking with flails, and poking and striking, and pushing and heaving against people with the white wooden pitchforks that now were red and with their tines broken. And this was going on all over the room while Pablo sat in the big chair with his shotgun on his knees, watching. And they were shouting, and clubbing and stabbing, and men were screaming as horses scream in a fire. And I saw the priest with his skirts tucked up, scrambling over a bench, and those after him were chopping at him with the sickles and the reaping hooks, and then someone had hold of his robe, and there was another scream and another scream. And I saw two men chopping into his back with sickles, while a third man held the skirt of his robe, and the priest's arms were up, and he was clinging to the back of a chair. And then the chair I was standing on broke, and the drunkard and I were on the pavement that smelled of spilled wine and vomit, and the drunkard was shaking his finger at me and saying, "No hay derecho, mujer, no hay derecho. You could have done me an injury." And the people were trampling over us to get into the hall of the ayuntamiento, and all I could see was legs of people going into the doorway, and the drunkard sitting there facing me and holding himself where I had hit him. That was the end of the killing of the fascists in our town, and I was glad I did not see more of it, and but for that drunkard I would have seen it all. So he served some good, because in the ayuntamiento it was a thing one is sorry to have seen. But the other drunkard was something rarer still. As we got up after the breaking of the chair, and the people were still crowding into the ayuntamiento, I saw this drunkard of the square with his red and black scarf, again pouring something over Don Anastasio. He was shaking his head from side to side, and it was very hard for him to sit up. But he was pouring and lighting matches, and then pouring and lighting matches, and I walked over to him and said, "What are you doing, shameless?" "Nada, mujer, nada," he said. "Let me alone." And perhaps because I was standing there so that my legs made a shelter from the wind, the match caught, and a blue flame began to run up the shoulder of the coat of Don Anastasio and onto the back of his neck, and the drunkard put his head up and shouted in a huge voice, "They're burning the dead! They're burning the dead!" "Who?" somebody said. "Where?" shouted someone else. "Here!" bellowed the drunkard. "Exactly here!" Then someone hit the drunkard a great blow alongside the head with a flail, and he fell back, and lying on the ground, he looked up at the man who had hit him, and then shut his eyes and crossed his hands on his chest, and lay there beside Don Anastasio as though he were asleep. The man did not hit him again, and he lay there, and he was still there when they picked up Don Anastasio and put him with the others in the cart that hauled them all over to the cliff where they were thrown over that evening with the others after there had been a cleaning up in the Ayuntamiento. It would have been better for the town if they had thrown over 20 or 30 of the drunkards, especially those of the red and black scarves, and if we ever have another revolution, I believe they should be destroyed at the start. But then we did not know this, but in the next days we were to learn. But that night we did not know what was to come. After the slaying in the Ayuntamiento there was no more killing, but we could not have a meeting that night because there were too many drunkards. It was impossible to obtain order, and so the meeting was postponed until the next day. That night I slept with Pablo. I should not say this to you, Guapa, but on the other hand it is good for you to know everything, and at least what I tell you is true. Listen to this, Inglés. It is very curious. As I say, that night we ate, and it was very curious. It was as after a storm or a flood or a battle, and everyone was tired and no one spoke much. I myself felt hollow and not well, and I was full of shame and of a sense of wrongdoing, and I had a great feeling of oppression and of bad to come, as this morning after the plains. And certainly bad came within 3 days. Pablo, when we ate, spoke little. "Did you like it, Pilar?" he asked finally, with his mouth full of roast young goat. We were eating at the inn from where the buses leave, and the room was crowded, and people were singing, and there was difficulty serving. "No," I said. "Except for Don Faustino, I did not like it." "I liked it," he said. "All of it?" I asked him. "All of it," he said, and cut himself a big piece of bread with his knife and commenced to mop up gravy with it. "All of it except the priest." "You didn't like it about the priest?" Because I knew he hated priests even worse than he hated fascists. "He was a disillusionment to me," Pablo said sadly. "So many people were singing that we had to almost shout to hear one another." "Why?" "He died very badly," Pablo said. "He had very little dignity." "How did you want him to have dignity when he was being chased by the mob?" I said. "I thought he had much dignity all the time before. All the dignity that one could have." "Yes," Pablo said. "But in the last minute he was frightened." "Who wouldn't be?" I said. "Did you see what they were chasing him with?" "Why would I not see?" Pablo said. "But I find he died badly." "In such circumstances anyone dies badly," I told him. "What do you want for your money?" "Everything that happened in the Ayuntamiento was scabrous." "Yes," said Pablo. "There was little organization, but a priest. He has an example to set." "I thought you hated priests." "Yes," said Pablo, and cut some more bread. "But a Spanish priest?" "A Spanish priest should die very well." "I think he died well enough," I said, being deprived of all formality. "No," Pablo said. "To me he was a great disillusionment. All day I had waited for the death of the priest. I had thought he would be the last to enter the lines. I awaited it with great anticipation. I expected something of a culmination. I had never seen a priest die." "There is time," I said to him sarcastically. "Only today did the movement start." "No," he said, "I am disillusioned." "Now," I said, "I suppose you will lose your faith." "You do not understand, Pilar," he said. "He was a Spanish priest." "What people the Spaniards are," I said to him. "And what a people they are for pride, eh, Inglés? What a people." "We must get on," Robert Jordan said. He looked at the sun. "It's nearly noon." "Yes," Pilar said. "We will go now. But let me tell you about Pablo." That night he said to me, "Pilar, tonight we will do nothing." "Good," I told him. "That pleases me." "I think it would be bad taste after the killing of so many people." "Que va," I told him. "What a saint you are. You think I lived years with bullfighters not to know how they are after the corrida?" "Is it true, Pilar?" he asked me. "When did I lie to you?" I told him. "It is true, Pilar, I am a finished man this night. You do not reproach me?" "No, hombre," I said to him. "But don't kill people every day, Pablo." And he slept that night like a baby, and I woke him in the morning at daylight, but I could not sleep that night. And I got up and sat in a chair and looked out of the window, and I could see the square and the moonlight where the lines had been, and across the square the trees shining in the moonlight, and the darkness of their shadows, and the benches bright too in the moonlight, and the scattered bottles shining, and beyond, the edge of the cliff where they had all been thrown. And there was no sound but the splashing of the water in the fountain, and I sat there, and I thought, we have begun badly. The window was open, and up the square from the fonda I could hear a woman crying. I went out on the balcony, standing there in my bare feet on the iron, and the moon shone on the faces of all the buildings of the square, and the crying was coming from the balcony of the house of Don Guillermo. It was his wife, and she was on the balcony, kneeling and crying. Then I went back inside the room, and I sat there, and I did not wish to think, for that was the worst day of my life until one other day. "What was the other?" Maria asked. 3 days later, when the fascists took the town. "Do not tell me about it," said Maria. "I do not want to hear it. This is enough. This was too much."
"I told you should not have listened," Pilar said. "See? I did not want you to hear it. Now you will have bad dreams."
"No," said Maria. "But I do not want to hear more."
"I wish you would tell me of it sometime," Robert Jordan said.
"I will," Pilar said. "But it is bad for Maria."
"I don't want to hear it," Maria said pitifully. "Please, Pilar, and do not tell it if I am there, for I might listen in spite of myself."
Her lips were working, and Robert Jordan thought she would cry.
"Please, Pilar, do not tell it."
"Do not worry, little cropped head," Pilar said. "Do not worry. But I will tell the Inglés sometime."
"But I want to be there when he is there," Maria said. "Oh, Pilar, do not tell it at all."
"I will tell it when thou art working."
"No, no, please. Let us not tell it at all," Maria said.
"It is only fair to tell it since I have told what we did," Pilar said. "But you shall never hear it."
"Are there no pleasant things to speak of?" Maria said. "Do we have to talk always of horrors?"
"This afternoon," Pilar said, "thou and Inglés, the two of you can speak of what you wish."
"Then that the afternoon should come," Maria said, "that it should come flying."
"It will come," Pilar told her. "It will come flying, and go the same way, and tomorrow will fly too."
"This afternoon," Maria said, "this afternoon, that this afternoon should come."
Chapter 11. As they came up, still deep in the shadow of the pines, after dropping down from the high meadow into the wooden valley, and climbing up it on a trail that paralleled the stream, and then left it to gain steeply the top of a rim rock formation, a man with a carbine stepped out from behind a tree.
"Halt," he said. Then, "Hola, Pilar. Who is this with thee?"
"An Inglés," Pilar said, "but with a Christian name, Roberto. And what an obscenity of steepness it is to arrive here."
"Salud, camarada,"
the guard said to Robert Jordan, and put out his hand.
"Are you well?"
"Yes," said Robert Jordan. "And thee?"
"Equally," the guard said.
He was very young, with a light build, thin, rather hawk-nosed face, high cheekbones and gray eyes. He wore no hat, his hair was black and shaggy, and his hand clasp was strong and friendly. His eyes were friendly, too.
"Hello, Maria," he said to the girl. "You did not tire yourself?"
"Que va, Joaquin," the girl said. "We have sat and talked more than we have walked."
"Are you the dynamiter?"
Joaquin asked.
"We have heard you were here."
"We passed the night at Pablo's," Robert Jordan said. "Yes, I am the dynamiter."
"We are glad to see you," Joaquin said. "Is it for a train?"
"Were you at the last train?" Robert Jordan asked and smiled.
"Was I not?" Joaquin said. "That's where we got this."
He grinned at Maria.
"You are pretty now," he said to Maria. "Have they told thee how pretty?"
"Shut up, Joaquin, and thank you very much," Maria said. "You'd be pretty with a haircut."
"I carried thee," Joaquin told the girl. "I carried thee over my shoulder."
"As did many others," Pilar said in the deep voice. "Who didn't carry her? Where is the old man?"
"At the camp."
"Where was he last night?"
"In Segovia."
"Did he bring news?"
"Yes," Joaquin said. "There is news."
"Good or bad?"
"I believe bad."
"Did you see the planes?"
"Aye," said Joaquin, and shook his head. "Don't talk to me of that. Comrade Dynamiter, what planes were those?"
"Heinkel 111 bombers. Heinkel and Fiat Pursuit, Robert Jordan told him.
What were the big ones with the low wings?
Heinkel 111s.
By any names they are as bad, Joaquin said. But I am delaying you. I will take you to the commander.
The commander? Pilar asked. Joaquin nodded seriously.
I like it better than chief, he said. It is more military.
You are militarizing heavily, Pilar said, and laughed at him.
No, Joaquin said. But I like military terms because it makes orders clearer and for better discipline.
Here is one according to thy taste, Inglés, Pilar said. A very serious boy.
Should I carry thee?
Joaquin asked the girl and put his arm on her shoulder and smiled in her face.
Once was enough, Maria told him. Thank you just the same.
Can you remember it? Joaquin asked her.
I can remember being carried, Maria said. By you, no. I remember the gypsy because he dropped me so many times. But I thank thee, Joaquin, and I'll carry thee sometime.
I can remember it well enough, Joaquin said. I can remember holding thy two legs, and thy belly was on my shoulder, and thy head over my back, and thy arms hanging down against my back.
Thou hast much memory, Maria said, and smiled at him. I remember nothing of that, neither thy arms, nor thy shoulders, nor thy back.
Do you want to know something? Joaquin asked her.
What is it? I was glad thou wert hanging over my back when the shots were coming from behind us.
What a swine, Maria said.
And was it for this the gypsy too carried me so much?
For that, and to hold on to thy legs.
My heroes, Maria said. My saviors.
Listen, guapa, Pilar told her. This boy carried thee much, and in that moment thy legs said nothing to anyone. In that moment only the bullets talked clearly. And if he would have dropped thee, he could soon have been out of range of the bullets.
I have thanked him, Maria said, and I will carry him sometime. Allow us to joke. I do not have to cry, do I, because he carried me?
I'd have dropped thee, Joaquin went on teasing her,
but I was afraid Pilar would shoot me.
I shoot no one, Pilar said.
No hace falta, Joaquin told her. You don't need to. You scare them to death with your mouth.
What a way to speak, Pilar told him. And you used to be such a polite little boy. What did you do before the movement, little boy?
Very little, Joaquin said. I was 16.
But what, exactly?
A few pair of shoes from time to time.
Make them?
No, shine them.
Que va, said Pilar. There is more to it than that. She looked at his brown face, his lithe build, his shock of hair, and the quick heel and toe way that he walked. Why did you fail at it?
Fail at what?
What? You know what. You're growing the pigtail now.
I guess it was fear, the boy said.
You've a nice figure, Pilar told him, but the face isn't much. So it was fear, was it? You were all right at the train.
I have no fear of them now, the boy said. None. And we have seen much worse things, and more dangerous than the bulls.
It is clear no bull is as dangerous as a machine gun. But if I were in the ring with one now, I do not know if I could dominate my legs.
He wanted to be a bullfighter, Pilar explained to Robert Jordan, but he was afraid.
Do you like the bulls, Comrade Dynamiter? Joaquin grinned, showing white teeth.
Very much, Robert Jordan said. Very, very much.
Have you seen them in Valladolid? Asked Joaquin.
Yes, in September at the Feria.
That's my town, Joaquin said.
What a fine town. But how the buena gente, the good people of that town, have suffered in this war.
Then his face grave.
There they shot my father, my mother, my brother-in-law, and now my sister.
What barbarians, Robert Jordan said. How many times had he heard this? How many times had he watched people say it with difficulty? How many times had he seen their eyes fill and their throats harden with the difficulty of saying my father, or my brother, or my mother, or my sister? He could not remember how many times he had heard them mention their dead in this way. Nearly always they spoke as this boy did now, suddenly and apropos of the mention of the town, and always you said, what barbarians. You only heard the statement of the loss. You did not see the father fall as Pilar made him see the fascists die in that story she had told by the stream. You knew the father died in some courtyard, or against some wall, or in some field or orchard, or at night, in the lights of a truck beside some road. You had seen the lights of the car from the hills, and heard the shooting, and afterwards you had come down to the road and found the bodies. You did not see the mother shot, nor the sister, nor the brother. You heard about it. You heard the shots. And you saw the bodies. Pilar had made him see it in that town. If that woman could only write. He would try to write it, and if he had luck and could remember it, perhaps he could get it down as she told it. God, how she could tell a story. She's better than Quevedo, he thought. He never wrote the death of any Don Faustino as well as she told it. I wish I could write well enough to write that story, he thought. What we did, not what the others did to us. He knew enough about that. He knew plenty about that behind the lines. But you had to have known the people before. You had to know what they had been in the village. Because of our mobility, and because we did not have to stay afterwards to take the punishment, we never knew how anything really ended, he thought. You stayed with a peasant and his family. You came at night and ate with them. In the day you were hidden, and the next night you were gone. You did your job and cleared out. The next time you came that way, you heard that they had been shot. It was as simple as that. But you were always gone when it happened. The partisans did their damage and pulled out. The peasants stayed and took the punishment. I've always known about the other, he thought, what we did to them at the start. I've always known it and hated it, and I have heard it mentioned shamelessly and shamefully, bragged of, boasted of, defended, explained, and denied. But that damned woman made me see it as though I had been there. Well, he thought, it is part of one's education. It will be quite an education when it's finished. You learn in this war if you listen. You most certainly did. He was lucky that he had lived parts of 10 years in Spain before the war. They trusted you on the language, principally. They trusted you on understanding the language completely and speaking it idiomatically and having a knowledge of the different places. A Spaniard was only really loyal to his village in the end. First Spain, of course, then his own tribe, then his province, then his village, his family, and finally his trade. If you knew Spanish, he was prejudiced in your favor. If you knew his province, it was that much better. But if you knew his village and his trade, you were in as far as any foreigner ever could be. He never felt like a foreigner in Spanish, and they did not really treat him like a foreigner most of the time. Only when they turned on you. Of course they turned on you. They turned on you often, but they always turned on everyone. They turned on themselves, too. If you had three together, two would unite against one, and then the two would start to betray each other. Not always, but often enough for you to take enough cases and start to draw it as a conclusion. This was no way to think. But who censored his thinking? Nobody but himself. He would not think himself into any defeatism. The first thing was to win the war. If we did not win the war, everything was lost. But he noticed and listened to and remembered everything. He was serving in a war, and he gave absolute loyalty and as complete a performance as he could give while he was serving. But nobody owned his mind, nor his faculties for seeing and hearing, and if he were going to form judgments, he would form them afterwards, and there would be plenty of material to draw them from. There was plenty already. There was a little too much, sometimes. Look at the Pilar woman, he thought. No matter what comes, if there is time, I must make her tell me the rest of that story. Look at her walking along with those two kids. You could not get three better-looking products of Spain than those. She is like a mountain, and the boy and the girl are like young trees. The old trees are all cut down, and the young trees are growing clean like that. In spite of what has happened to the two of them, they look as fresh and clean and new and untouched, as though they had never heard of misfortune. But according to Pilar, Maria has just gotten sound again. She must have been in an awful shape. He remembered a Belgian boy in the 11th Brigade who had enlisted with 5 other boys from his village. It was a village of about 200 people, and the boy had never been away from the village before. When he first saw the boy, out at Hans' brigade staff, the other 5 from the village had all been killed, and the boy was in very bad shape, and they were using him as an orderly to wait on table at the staff. He had a big, blonde, ruddy, Flemish face, and huge, awkward peasant hands, and he moved with the dishes as powerfully and awkwardly as a draft horse. But he cried all the time. All during the meal he cried, with no noise at all. You looked up and there he was crying. If you asked for the wine, he cried, and if you passed your plate for stew, he cried, turning away his head. Then he would stop, but if you looked up at him, tears would start coming again. Between courses, he cried in the kitchen. Everyone was very gentle with him, but it did no good. He would have to find out what became of him, and whether he ever cleared up and was fit for soldiering again. Maria was sound enough now. She seemed so anyway. But he is no psychiatrist. Pilar was the psychiatrist. It probably had been good for them to have been together last night. Yes, unless it stopped. It certainly had been good for him. He felt fine today, sound and good and unworried and happy. The show looked bad enough, but he was awfully lucky, too. He had been in others that announced themselves badly. Announced themselves. That was thinking in Spanish. Maria was lovely. Look at her, he said to himself. Look at her. He looked at her striding happily in the sun, her khaki shirt open at the neck. She walks like a colt moves, he thought. You do not run onto something like that. Such things don't happen. Maybe it never did happen, he thought. Maybe you dreamed it or made it up, and it never did happen. Maybe it is like the dreams you have when someone you have seen in the cinema comes to your bed at night and is so kind and lovely. He'd slept with them all that way when he was asleep in bed. He could remember Garbo still, and Harlow. Yes, Harlow many times. Maybe it was like those dreams. But he could still remember the time Garbo came to his bed the night before the attack at Pozo Blanco, and she was wearing a soft, silky wool sweater when he put his arm around her, and when she leaned forward her hair swept forward and over his face, and she said why had he never told her that he loved her when she had loved him all this time. She was not shy, nor cold, nor distant. She was just lovely to hold, and kind and lovely, and like the old days with Jack Gilbert, and it was as true as though it happened, and he loved her much more than Harlow, though Garbo was only there once, while Harlow... Maybe this was like those dreams. Maybe it isn't, too, he said to himself. Maybe I could reach over and touch that Maria now, he said to himself. Maybe you are afraid to, he said to himself. Maybe you would find out that it never happened, and it was not true, and it was something you made up like those dreams about the people of the cinema, or how all your old girls come back and sleep in that robe at night on all the bare floors, in the straw of the hay barns, the stables, the corrales and the cortijos, the woods, the garages, the trucks and all the hills of Spain. They all came to that robe when he was asleep, and they were all much nicer than they had ever been in life. Maybe it was like that. Maybe you would be afraid to touch her to see if it was true. Maybe you would, and probably it is something that you made up or that you dreamed. He took a step across the trail and put his hand on the girl's arm. Under his fingers he felt the smoothness of her arm and the worn khaki. She looked at him and smiled. Hello, Maria, he said. Hello, Inglés, she answered, and he saw her tawny brown face and the yellow-gray eyes and the full lips smiling and the cropped, sunburned hair, and she lifted her face at him and smiled in his eyes. It was true, all right. Now they were in the sight of El Sordo's camp, in the last of the pines, where there was a rounded gulch head shaped like an upturned basin. All these limestone upper basins must be full of caves, he thought. There are two caves there ahead. The scrub pines growing in the rock hide them well. This is as good or a better place than Pablo's. How was this shooting of thy family? Pilar was saying to Joaquin. Nothing, woman, Joaquin said. They were of the left, as many others in Valladolid. When the fascists purified the town, they shot first my father. He had voted socialist. Then they shot the mother. She had voted the same. It was the first time she had ever voted. After that, they shot the husband of one of the sisters. He was a member of the syndicate of tramway drivers. Clearly he could not drive a tram without belonging to the syndicate. But he was without politics. I knew him well. He was even a little bit shameless. I do not think he was even a good comrade. Then the husband of the other girl, the other sister, who was also in the trams, had gone to the hills as I had. They thought she knew where he was, but she did not. So they shot her because she would not tell them where he was. What barbarians, said Pilar. Where is El Sordo? I do not see him.
He is here. He is probably inside, answered Joaquin, and stopping now and resting the rifle butt on the ground, said, Pilar, listen to me, and now Maria. Forgive me if I have molested you speaking of things of the family. I know that all have the same troubles, and it is more valuable not to speak of them.
That you should speak, Pilar said, for what are we born if not to aid one another? And to listen and say nothing is a cold enough aid.
But it can molest the Maria. She has too many things of her own.
Que va, Maria said. Mine are such a big bucket that yours falling in will never fill it.
I am sorry, Joaquin, and I hope thy sister is well.
So far she's all right, Joaquin said. They have her in prison, and it seems they do not mistreat her much.
Are there others in the family? Robert Jordan asked.
No, the boy said. Me, nothing more. Except the brother-in-law who went to the hills, and I think he is dead.
Maybe he is all right, Maria said. Maybe he is with a band in other mountains.
For me he is dead, Joaquin said. He was never too good at getting about, and he was conductor of a tram, and that is not the best preparation for the hills. I doubted if he could last a year. He was somewhat weak in the chest, too.
But he may be all right, Maria put her arms on his shoulder.
Certainly, girl. Why not? Said Joaquin.
As the boy stood there, Maria reached up, put her arms around his neck, and kissed him. Joaquin turned his head away because he was crying.
That is as a brother, Maria said to him. I kiss thee as a brother.
The boy shook his head, crying without making any noise.
I am thy sister, Maria said, and I love thee, and thou hast a family. We are all thy family.
Including the Inglés, boomed Pilar. Isn't it true, Inglés?
Yes, Robert Jordan said to the boy. We are all thy family, Joaquin.
He's your brother, Pilar said. Hey, Inglés?
Robert Jordan put his arm around the boy's shoulder. We are all brothers, he said. The boy shook his head.
I am ashamed to have spoken, he said. To speak of such things makes it more difficult for all. I am ashamed of molesting you.
I have sanity in the milk of my shame, Pilar said in her deep, lovely voice. And if the Maria kisses thee again, I will commence kissing thee myself. It's years since I've kissed a bullfighter, even an unsuccessful one like thee. I would like to kiss an unsuccessful bullfighter turned communist. Hold him, Inglés, till I get a good kiss at him.
Deja, the boy said, and turned away sharply. Leave me alone. I am all right, and I am ashamed.
He stood there getting his face under control. Maria put her hand in Robert Jordan's. Pilar stood with her hands on her hips, looking at the boy mockingly now.
When I kiss thee, she said to him, it will not be as any sister. This trick of kissing as a sister.
It is not necessary to joke, the boy said. I told you I am all right. I am sorry that I spoke.
Well, then let us go and see the old man, Pilar said. I tire myself with such emotion.
The boy looked at her. From his eyes you could see he was suddenly very hurt.
Not thy emotion, Pilar said to him. Mine.
What a tender thing thou art for a bullfighter.
I was a failure, Joaquin said. You don't have to keep insisting on it.
But you are growing the pigtail another time.
Yes, and why not? Fighting stock serves best for that purpose economically. It gives employment to many, and the state will control it. And perhaps now I would not be afraid.
Perhaps not, Pilar said. Perhaps not.
Why do you speak in such a brutal manner, Pilar? Maria said to her. I love thee very much, but thou art acting very barbarous.
It is possible that I am barbarous, Pilar said.
Listen, Inglés, do you know what you are going to say to El Sordo?
Yes.
Because he is a man of few words, unlike me and thee and this sentimental menagerie.
Why do you talk thus? Maria asked again, angrily.
I don't know, said Pilar, as she strode along. Why do you think?
I do not know.
At times many things tire me, Pilar said angrily. You understand? And one of them is to have 48 years. You hear me? 48 years and an ugly face. And another is to see panic in the face of a failed bullfighter of communist tendencies when I say as a joke I might kiss him.
It's not true, Pilar, the boy said. You did not see that.
Que va, it's not true. And I have sanity in the milk of all of you.
Ah, there he is. Hola, Santiago. ¿Qué tal?
The man to whom Pilar spoke was short and heavy, brown-faced with broad cheekbones, gray-haired with wide-set yellow-brown eyes, a thin-bridged, hooked nose like an Indian's, a long upper lip, and a wide, thin mouth. He was clean-shaven, and he walked toward them from the mouth of the cave, moving with the bow-legged walk that went with his cattle-herdsman's breeches and boots. The day was warm, but he had on a sheep's wool-lined short leather jacket, buttoned up to the neck. He put out a big brown hand to Pilar.
"Hola, woman," he said. "Hola,"
he said to Robert Jordan, and shook his hand and looked him keenly in the face. Robert Jordan saw his eyes were yellow as a cat's and flat as reptiles' eyes are.
"Guapa,"
he said to Maria and patted her shoulder.
"Eaten?"
he asked Pilar. She shook her head.
"Eat,"
he said, and looked at Robert Jordan.
"Drink?"
he asked, making a motion with his hand, decanting his thumb downward. "Yes, thanks."
"Good," El Sordo said. "Whiskey?"
"You have whiskey?" El Sordo nodded.
"Inglés?"
he asked.
"Not Russo?"
"Americano."
"Few Americans here," he said.
"Now more?"
"Less bad. North or south?"
"North."
"Same as Inglés.
When blow bridge?" "You know about the bridge?" El Sordo nodded. "Day after tomorrow morning."
"Good," said El Sordo.
"Pablo?" he asked Pilar. She shook her head. El Sordo grinned.
"Go away,"
he said to Maria, and grinned again.
"Come back."
He looked at a large watch he pulled out on a leather thong from inside his coat.
"Half an hour."
He motioned to them to sit down on a flattened log that served as a bench, and looked at Joaquin, jerked his thumb down the trail in the direction they had come from.
"I'll walk down with Joaquin and come back," Maria said.
El Sordo went into the cave and came out with a pinch bottle of Scotch whiskey and three glasses. The bottle was under one arm, and three glasses were in the hand of that arm, a finger in each glass, and his other hand was around the neck of an earthenware jar of water. He put the glasses and the bottle down on the log and set the jug on the ground.
"No ice,"
he said to Robert Jordan, and handed him the bottle.
"I don't want any,"
Pilar said, and covered her glass with her hand.
"Ice last night on ground," El Sordo said, and grinned. "All melt. Ice up there,"
El Sordo said, and pointed to the snow that showed on the bare crest of the mountains.
"Too far."
Robert Jordan started to pour into El Sordo's glass, but the deaf man shook his head and made a motion for the other to pour for himself. Robert Jordan poured a big drink of scotch into the glass, and El Sordo watched him eagerly, and when he had finished, handed him the water jug, and Robert Jordan filled the glass with the cold water that ran in a stream from the earthenware spout as he tipped up the jug. El Sordo poured himself half a glassful of whiskey and filled the glass with water.
"Wine?"
he asked Pilar.
"No, water."
"Take it," he said.
"No good," he said to Robert Jordan, and grinned.
"New many English. Always much whiskey."
"Where?"
"Ranch," El Sordo said. "Friends of boss."
"Where do you get the whiskey?"
"What?"
he could not hear.
"You have to shout," Pilar said, "into the other ear."
El Sordo pointed to his better ear and grinned.
"Where do you get the whiskey?" Robert Jordan shouted. "Make it," El Sordo said,
and watched Robert Jordan's hand check on its way to his mouth with the glass.
"No," El Sordo said, and patted his shoulder. "Joke. Comes from La Granja. Heard last night comes English dynamiter. Good, very happy. Get whiskey for you. You like?"
"Very much," said Robert Jordan. "It's a very good whiskey."
"Am contented," Sordo grinned. "Was bringing tonight with information."
"What information?"
"Much troop movement."
"Where?"
"Segovia. Plains you saw?"
"Yes."
"Bad, eh?"
"Bad." "Troop movement?"
"Much between Via Castine and Segovia. On Valladolid Road. Much between Via Castine and San Rafael. Much. Much."
"What do you think?"
"We prepare something."
"Possibly."
"They know. Prepare too."
"It is possible."
"Why not blow bridge tonight?"
"Orders."
"Whose orders?"
"General staff."
"So."
Is the time of the blowing important? Pilar asked.
Of all importance.
But if they are moving up troops?
I will send Anselmo with a report of all movement and concentrations. He is checking the road.
You have someone at road? Sordo asked.
Robert Jordan did not know how much he had heard. You never know with a deaf man.
Yes, he said.
Me too. Why not blow bridge now?
I have my orders.
I don't like it, El Sordo said. This I do not like.
Nor I, said Robert Jordan. El Sordo shook his head and took a sip of the whiskey.
You want of me?
How many men have you?
8.
To cut the telephone, attack the post at the house of the roadmenders, take it, and fall back on the bridge.
It is easy.
It will all be written out.
Don't trouble. And Pablo?
We'll cut the telephone below, attack the post at the sawmill, take it, and fall back on the bridge.
And afterwards, for the retreat? Pilar asked. We are 7 men, 2 women, and 5 horses.
You are? She shouted in Sordo's ear.
8 men and 4 horses.
Faltan caballos, he said.
Lacks horses.
17 people and 9 horses, Pilar said, without accounting for transport.
Sordo said nothing.
There is no way of getting horses, Robert Jordan said into Sordo's best ear.
In war a year, Sordo said. Have 4.
He showed 4 fingers.
Now you want 8 for tomorrow?
Yes, said Robert Jordan, knowing you are leaving, having no need to be careful as you have been in this neighborhood, not having to be cautious here now. You could not cut out and steal 8 head of horses?
Maybe, Sordo said. Maybe none. Maybe more.
You have an automatic rifle? Robert Jordan asked. Sordo nodded.
Where?
Up the hill.
What kind?
Don't know name. With pans.
How many rounds?
5 pans.
Does anyone know how to use it?
Me, a little. Not shoot too much. Not want make noise here. Not want use cartridges.
I will look at it afterwards, Robert Jordan said. Have you hand grenades?
Plenty.
How many rounds per rifle?
Plenty.
How many?
150, more maybe.
What about other people?
For what?
To have sufficient force to take the posts and cover the bridge while I am blowing it. We should have double what we have.
Take posts, don't worry. What time day?
Daylight.
Don't worry.
I could use 20 more men, to be sure, Robert Jordan said.
Good ones do not exist. You want undependables?
No. How many good ones?
Maybe 4.
Why so few?
No trust.
For horse holders?
Must trust much to be horse holders.
I'd like 10 more good men if I could get them.
4.
Anselmo told me there were over 100 here in these hills.
No good.
You said 30, Robert Jordan said to Pilar. 30 of a certain degree of dependability.
What about the people of Elias?
Pilar shouted to Sordo. He shook his head.
No good.
You can't get 10? Robert Jordan asked. Sordo looked at him with his flat, yellow eyes and shook his head.
4,
he said, and held up 4 fingers.
Yours are good?
Robert Jordan asked, regretting it as he said it. Sordo nodded.
Dentro de la gravedad, he said in Spanish. Within the limits of the danger.
He grinned.
Will be bad, eh?
Possibly.
Is the same to me, Sordo said simply, and not boasting. Better 4 good than much bad. In this war always much bad, very little good. Every day fewer good. And Pablo?
He looked at Pilar.
As you know, Pilar said, worse every day.
Sordo shrugged his shoulders.
Take drink, Sordo said to Robert Jordan. I bring mine and 4 more. Makes 12. Tonight we discuss all. I have 60 sticks dynamite. You want?
What percent?
Don't know. Common dynamite. I bring.
We'll blow the small bridge above with that, Robert Jordan said. That is fine. You'll come down tonight?
Bring that, will you?
I've no orders for that, but it should be blown.
I come tonight, then hunt horses.
What chance for horses?
Maybe.